Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on September 17th, 2020, which means we're past the halfway point already of September. Okay, and to put this into a little bit of historical perspective, yesterday was the day Hurricane Sally hit the Alabama and Florida coastline, and they got real floods down there, and I have no idea what condition the schools are right today, but I wish everybody well down there. It's no fun to get hit by a hurricane. For a little while, I lived in Florida. We were hit with a number of them, and they are no fun, believe me, so I wish them good luck down there. It struck me as weird that they got so soaked. They got 20 days worth of rain in 4 hours, okay, down there in the southern Alabama and the Florida panhandle. While in California, they can't buy rain, okay, to put out the wildfires. It's in Oregon and Washington. It's just a real mix. So hopefully everybody's all right these days. So we're going to cheer you up, though. Speaking of being safe, all right, we've got Dr. Ken Roy with us today. Ken is a welcome guest here all the time as Director of Environmental Health and Safety over at Glastonbury Public Schools. He's the safety guy for NSTA, the National Science Education Leadership Association. We're going to talk about health and safety protocols for science and tech ed, STEM, okay, engineering during the COVID pandemic. And believe me, this is a show worth listening to. Ken's always worth listening to. I'll bring him on in a second. We're going to archive the show, education-talkradio.org. And you can also see exactly what we're doing if you go over to our other website, which is ace-ed.org, 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 the initialization of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's our organization. We are doing great over there. We publish our online journal, ACE Equity and Access. You'll love what we're doing at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Go over, join our consortium. Okay, Stand Out for Equity, etc. Read our magazine. It's all free. Everything's there for teachers K through 12. ace-ed.org. We're going to tweet out this show over at EduTalk Radio. Facebook is Education Talk Radio, and my name, Larry Jacobs, and LinkedIn is Larry Jacobs as well. And here he is, the one and only, my good buddy, Dr. Ken Roy. How are you, Ken?
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Ken. Okay, I had to ask, this is interesting. I always ask, although Ken is nice to fill this in, I actually know this, but he sent a little just brief synopsis of what he does. And Dr. Ken Roy, has over, this is, was interesting, Ken, 50-plus years of experience, and I'm wondering what that plus means. Does it mean like 495? What's the... Right. Is it true that you were Merlin the Wizard's assistant, lab assistant? Okay, many years ago. Rumors there.
I feel like, yes, I've been around since the beginning of time, to be honest with you, but
it's unbelievable. You were whispering in Einstein's ear, "Be safe, Albert. Be safe."
Well,
let me show you how.
I remember when Al was alive. Come on.
Actually, I do too, which is really frightening. Okay, it's unbelievable. Okay, I do remember when I remember when he died. Yeah, I mean, I was a little kid, but I do remember just, my parents talking about it. It was weird. Yeah,
my grandmother told me about it.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I was sitting with your grandmother that day. I remember. She was a young woman then. Yeah, I remember
that. Come on. Listen,
it's good to have
you
here, buddy. It's good to have you here, as always.
I estimate that we're about 200 miles apart, so I think we're addressing social distancing this morning.
We are indeed. We are indeed. And I'd rather be 6 feet apart from you and see you face-to-face than it'd be 200 miles apart. It's unbelievable. Of course, NSTA got canceled this year, right? Right? It's done.
Yes.
It was done.
And
yeah,
they've now canceled their regionals for this fall.
Yeah, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I hope people attend virtually. It's just, you know, we got to have these conferences because, and it's important, A, for the seminars like yours that are always there, but also to see the new products. I mean, NSTA is a big exhibit hall, and to see the new products
absolutely
that are out there, et cetera. And, boy, it's really difficult. We're going to have to get used to a new normal, I'm afraid. This
the
is going to last
norm
for a while because Dr. Redfield yesterday, regardless of what the president says, a vaccine's not going to be ready for a long time. Okay, I think I'll trust the science
rather than
President Trump. Yeah, I mean, it's...
all right, let's not get political there.
No, I'm not getting political, but, you know, I trust the science. I'm talking to a science guy.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I agree.
Yeah, and anybody should agree with that. It's that simple. We're talking science. And that actually, although we're not going to get political, that's very important for kids to understand, okay, that science is based on fact, a theory into fact. Okay, can't just ignore it. Yeah, you can't just ignore
it. No, this is what I call science live. All right, this is not in the textbook per se. This is what you actually see living the science. In other words, day to day, how is science being applied? How is it being used? What have we learned from the science? And how theoretically can we move into the future to make things better? I mean, this is what it's all about.
And who would have thought? Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's interesting, and I don't mean to get political with this, but it is interesting. I haven't thought about it. You know, science education has to step to the forefront here, okay, to make sure that people understand that what science says and what science experiments with and gives out information is based on fact. That's key.
Right.
That's key, and it puts science education into the limelight.
Them.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole idea here is to better help them make better decisions. That's what this comes down to.
I mean,
when you look at what people are saying, okay, you have to weigh it because, you know, you can see if you're on the internet, you can see one side, and then all of a sudden you go to another site and you see something totally 180 degrees in the opposite direction.
It's called media literacy. It's called media literacy.
Yes, right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And I'm not saying one side or the other, wrong, right, whatever, but you have to be able to measure
that's
the difference.
That's right. But you have to be able to weigh it. And based on the good science that we're aware of, at least that's a particular. And again, the science is changing too. It doesn't always remain the same. It's fluid.
It changes all the time.
It evolves most of the time, but sometimes it's revolutionary too. So.
Well, we no longer take the bumps on our head and assume we can diagnose somebody's challenges with that. Okay, and that would used to be called phrenology. And things do change, but we still have to. We still have to understand what science is and how important it is. And on that note, let's get into this for a second. We've got COVID. You are a lab safety expert. Kids are going back to school, but many of them are going back remotely. Okay? So how does COVID fit into this? What's going on with remote lab education? Is it going on at all? Because that's so much a part of science education. That's as good a place to start as any.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right. Yeah, well, the first thing I would start coming out of the gate is have to understand that to address the COVID, we need to look at things holistically. And by that, I'm saying what actions can we take to make it for a safer working learning environment?
Mm-hmm.
And specifically in science, as you noted, tech ed, engineering, and even art, all right, those areas are very hands-on. In other words, you don't just read about it, you do them, all right? You do them. So what are the components here? Well, obviously, number one, wearing a mask, very important, all right? Number two, as we already mentioned, social distancing. And it's very interesting. Again, this is a moving target. For the longest time, the CDC said, well, you know, you need minimally 6 feet. And recently I read on their website, well, maybe that's not enough. Maybe you need to be double or triple that amount. But anyway, we'll go with 6 feet for now.
Let's
so
go with
the
six
mask,
feet for
the social,
now. Yeah.
Right, the social distancing. Hand washing. Very important. And you don't need to necessarily go with a disinfectant. The science has shown that simply lathering up with soap and water disables the virus. Now, remember, virus is not alive. It's not alive. So you need to disable it. But just soap and water. So ongoing hand washing with soap and water. And do it, you know, you want to do like up to maybe a half a minute or so, but really get the lather because that's what does the deed.
I didn't know what you just said. I didn't know virus is not alive. Is that accurate?
Right. It's not a living thing. Virus.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, this is why you have me on your program.
Exactly. And I honest to God, maybe everybody else in the world knew that, but I didn't know that.
It has some characteristics. It has some characteristics of living things in that it does reproduce, but it does not meet all the criteria of a living thing. The last thing is, believe it or not, ventilation. Ventilation is also key in this particular situation, and we'll get into that little bit later. But here is the health. I'm going to give you the spectrum, which you probably already know. Obviously, in a teaching learning environment, the lowest risk, health risk-wise, with the COVID, all right, are students and teachers engaged in virtually only classes, right? And you mentioned virtual, which, again, we'll get into a little bit down the road.
Yeah.
But that is the, right now, the lowest, the safer way to go, obviously. The highest risk, which is the most unsafe, is the full-size in-person classes, activities, and events, all right, without using masks and this, that, whatever. So you have one, you know, end of the spectrum to the other. So that's what you need to be thinking about. Now,
it's really something. And by the way, I've been doing a couple of shows with architects from school architects from Fielding International, and that ventilation, you said, is the most, to them, if I may, they said that's the most important thing for schools right now, ventilation.
Okay. Well, yes and no. I mean, it's a combination. As I said, holistically, you have to look at this. Even you can have ventilation, but if you don't have a mask and you don't have the social distancing, you're not going to be free and clear.
Yeah.
All right. But getting into ventilation, let's just talk real quick about the ventilation.
Because
this is something people really need to have a handle on. And it's interesting because I had a teacher contact me, was all upset because the teacher's window in the classroom wasn't working, and the teacher wanted to make sure that the windows could be open so they could be bringing in fresh air. And I said, well, wait a minute. I said, you know, there's more than COVID out there. I said, you have people with asthma, other respiratory issues. You have these allergens out there with pollen. Even in the fall, you have a lot of this. You have particulate matter floating around. I said, you don't want to open windows. I said, you want to let the ventilation system do its job. In other words, ventilation systems have filters, right? And those filters help to reduce the amount of allergens in the air that people are breathing in. And the teacher said, well, I have all of these people in this classroom. How is the ventilation going to keep up? Most ventilation systems have CO2 sensors. In other words, the more people you have in a classroom, the higher the level of carbon dioxide you're putting out. The ventilation system senses that, and it cranks up the speed of the amount of fresh air coming in. Now, one other very interesting fact. The fire code, if you're under NFPA, and not every state is, but the vast majority are, science labs are required to have 100% fresh air. In other words, the air comes in, the air leaves the building. Well, why is that? Well, that's because in science labs, they produce all types of toxins, flammables, all sorts of goodies. You don't want that going to other parts of the building. You want it coming, the fresh air coming in, and you want to exhaust all of those nasty particulates and vapors and that type of thing. So that's good news for the science. Well, what about tech ed? Same thing for tech ed, all right? However, art is a different story. Art is like other areas. Normally in a school, they only get approximately 20% fresh air in the cycle. 80% of that air is recycled from other parts of the building, believe it or not. So if I have COVID globules or whatever it is in the air and it's being sucked in by the ventilation, all right, those normally the filters, a regular system, does not filter out the virus. Okay, it filters out other pieces that we talked about. It doesn't filter out that virus. So that's being recycled. So somebody sneezes in the room next door, the ventilation system, the return sucks it up, and it's blowing it out to your supply in your room.
Great.
All right? And this actually in the Wuhan in China, they found out. This is one way they found out was in the story about the restaurant, and they had a number of the clients in there in the restaurant that came down with the virus, and they claimed because they didn't have masks on, the ventilation system was recycling it to all parts of the restaurant, and that's how they got it. So,
I want to ask you something. This is incredibly interesting. You might have the answer to this. What's the percentage of schools, and I know you were in Glastonbury, but you work with NSTA, so you got a national number. What's the percentage of schools right now that are doing on-site science labs? Do we have any idea?
Well, again, no, we don't, because it's continuously changing. All right, it almost changes day to day. I have been hearing, again, through the national, more districts are starting to close because as when the kids went back, all of a sudden somebody has the characteristics, they're exhibiting the symptoms of the COVID, they're tested, they found out they have it. Now, remember what happens. If I'm a teacher and I have a class of, let's say, 24 kids in a science lab, right? I develop symptoms, I have the COVID. Well, that means now that that whole class has to leave and go home and has to be sequestered for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, quarantined.
Right?
Yeah.
And in some districts, it all depends on what the rules and regulations, the protocols are being followed. Some schools, if that happens in one class, the whole school shuts down. All right?
Yeah,
so that's what I'm saying. It's a real moving target.
It really is. So let me. So Ken, again, you're an expert on science labs, okay? And it's pretty hard to learn science. I mean, I remember this without some sort of a lab. All right, that's why we have science labs, quite obviously. So I have no idea what the percentages of schools that are doing labs, but I can ask this. All right, if kids went back to school, I don't know if this is even possible, just for the science lab. Would you say that the science labs are the safest rooms in the school? Because they're pre-built for this stuff.
Yeah, relatively speaking, again, because of the ventilation
piece. That's what I mean, yeah. Yeah, so assuming,
yeah, because
assuming
of the ventilation
the mask,
piece,
assuming the social distancing.
Right.
Assuming that,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, however, and you know, this brings us into a whole different area, and that is, you know, what are the models that can be used for science tech ed instruction? Well, obviously, you can do a situation, and these are the examples of different models that I'm aware of that are going on out there. You'll have a teacher-led demonstration. In other words, the kids socially distance in the lab, and the kids are watching the demonstration. In other words, instead of them doing the actual hands-on, they're actually watching it being done hands-on by the teacher, or it could be a single student that's assigned this that would do it, right? And the kids take the notes, they get data, they then process the data, they work it up, and they do their lab reports and that type of thing. So that's one way of doing it in the lab. Another way of doing it is that you have what we call solo labs. Solo labs means you have half the class are sitting in their seats doing an assignment or observing. The other class are actually doing the hands-on at the lab desks. And usually with the size of most of these lab desks, you can have approximately two students, and you go diagonally, one at each end, and they are doing the lab together. One is actually doing the hands-on. The other one is taking down the data, doing the observation, and that type of thing. So in that particular case, that's a real doing of science. They're actually engaged. And then what happens is when they're done, they sit down, and the rest of the class comes back up, and they do their piece of it. So that's a really good model. And
that is a good model. I like that.
It seems to be working fairly well. And the other end of the spectrum, obviously, is if you have it virtual, and there are all sorts of things that are available for virtual. There's a lot of YouTube things where the kids can watch actual demonstrations. They can actually see laboratories in operation, you know, all sorts of things. The other is that they have the teacher back at the lab, and they're Zooming it or using some type of media, and the kids are at home, and they're watching it, and they can see it. Another one model is the kids do the laboratory work at home, all right? And, of course, there are a lot of restrictions with that, and it needs to be simplified, but it is doable, and I have seen that done. It's a lot of pressure, a lot of time put on the teacher, I will tell you that, because safety absolutely is critical. If somebody gets hurt at home, there is still duty or standard of care for that teacher in the school district. So you better make sure that you provide an actual disclaimer, which the NSTA has on their website that you can use. It's a template. And also
But don't you need things to do an experiment? You need beakers or scalpels or chemicals or whatever the case
not Well, not necessarily so. It depends on the type of science you're doing. Also, there are some types of kitchen types of glassware you can use. There are alternatives, like I'm saying. It's not going to be the rigorous, hardcore science, but at least the thinking skills, the hands-on piece is still there, and that's what's important.
And I like that one where the teacher demonstrates it for everybody, and all the kids can see it on Zoom, et cetera. I have to ask a question. This is, you know, we do, as I always say, you're an expert on this. We do the science lab so the kids can experience things hands-on. But in the end, as you look at, quote, this new normal, okay, what do you think the ramifications are going to be regarding this new type of doing a lab in terms of science learning? Or maybe I'm asking you a question, how important is the hands-on lab? Okay, when there are now other ways to do it. You know, there's I know companies, and I'll give you one I just know, called Z-Space, that if a school district buys this, it becomes a three-dimensional hologram, okay?
Right.
That's on your computer, and you can literally dissect the fetal pig, okay? Almost literally. Of course, it's virtual, but that little fetal pig is right in front of you. And you're actually doing it. What are the long-term ramifications going to be for all this?
Well, let me answer your question by giving you a question.
Okay.
Would you rather have a physician who's about to operate on you having only seen virtual types of dissections or operations or this or whatever, as opposed to somebody that's actually had their hands inside the body?
Well, of course, it would be number two. Okay.
Right.
But
no kidding.
But we're talking about
K-12.
We're talking. It is to a certain extent, but we're talking about K-12. We're not talking about medical school. That's a different thing. And if you want to talk about that, I would love to.
Yes.
Or any
yes
biology,
no.
Any college science lab. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Because what happens when they graduate and they hopefully go to university, and are they going to be able to? You know, I know a lot of universities now have already gone virtual, all right? And this includes their science labs.
Right.
So this could be carried well beyond K-12. This could be K-16 plus, all right? And it's a serious situation, and it's one, you know what? This is a Band-Aid right now. And hopefully we're ultimately going to move on and get back to where we need to be. This is not where we need to be, and there are some negatives, but it's a Band-Aid. For now, it will get us where we need to be.
Do you think we'll get back to normal?
I think eventually, and let me
ask it another way, and you're also an expert on this, the legal ramifications. If you're doing a virtual experiment, okay, there's quite obviously you're not holding a real scalpel. Okay, there's far less danger of anything going wrong. The safety, you're going to be much safer, 100% safer, okay, or 99.9% safer anyway, okay. And do you think that this is going to have a long term ramification in the teaching of science? Now, I don't say you want that to happen, but I'm asking you, considering the legal, considering what we're learning, do you think there's going to be a sea change about this?
Well, I know you're an old guy
like me. We like the old methods, but you appreciate
the
new
ones.
Well,
because the old methods are time tested.
Yeah, I agree.
That's right. We're like right now explorers. We're going in uncharted waters in many ways. And what is there? You bring up a good point. Is there going to be a long-term ultimate situation here that is going to impact safety-wise when these people, these students, in other words, get into the real world because they haven't had the actual exposure that, to the
rest of the story, as Paul Hurr or Harvey
rest
used to
of
say.
The story, exactly, the safety piece. And that could be a big issue. It could be a big issue.
Yeah,
hopefully
Hopefully
not. This is why I'm hopeful that this will be, like I said, a temporary situation, and we ultimately will. Well, I'm just pleased that many of the schools have reopened, and they're actually in the science lab. At least they can see hands-on, and hopefully if they're able to do the sharing, as I told you, of the hands-on lab, that's a really good thing, because
well,
then you are actually addressing
Well, let's talk about the safest school district in the world. Okay, Glastonbury, Connecticut, your district.
Don't let my superintendent hear that.
It's got to be the safest place in the world. You're in charge there. Okay.
I know. Never say safer. You'll be the safer.
That's a place. You should actually retire everybody to Glastonbury High School because that's the safest place in the world. Trust me on this. Okay, just move in. Okay. So what's happening at Glastonbury? Okay,
what we're doing is this, and in Connecticut, the governor has kind of left it up to each school district, so some school districts are doing different.
Yeah.
We are. Our elementary, we have what we call cohorts. In other words, there are students that if you're in grade one, room 10, you're in that room all day. So it's just that one group. So our elementary, every kid has come back.
This is
K-5, all right? And, again, knock on wood, we've only been in there for about a week and a half, but so far no problems. It seems to be working. They are still maintaining. They're still maintaining their social distancing. They still have the use of masks, but they are very limited to the people that they interact with in that school.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But they're interacting with their teacher in a relationship basis.
Their teacher.
An in-person basis. That's beautiful.
Exactly.
That's beautiful.
Exactly. Okay, now let's go to the more toward the secondary level. So grades 6 through 12, you're talking about your middle and your high schools. They have a split situation. Half of the school comes on Monday and Tuesday. The other half are home doing virtual.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday, everybody's doing virtual. Thursday and Friday, the other half that weren't there on Monday and Tuesday come in, and the Monday and Tuesday go virtual. So basically, they're actually in the labs, they're actually in the classrooms 2 days a week, and 3 days a week they're doing virtual.
Excellent.
So it's mixed.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. Yeah, so far, so good.
Are they doing sports?
We're just starting.
Are they doing sports?
Limited. But they still have gym, and they still this and that. But, again, social distancing, very much the sports right now is somewhat up in the air between other schools and the like. And, they're working on that.
Same here.
Yeah, they're working on that to see what way that's going to go. But, again, I think this is a very viable type of model in that it's a hybrid. It's a hybrid approach. This is what they call it.
Yeah, that's good.
And, they're still getting in there with their peers. You know, they're still meeting people. They're still interacting with people. They're still doing the hands-on. They're seeing.
And they're home 2 days a week. They're home 2 days a week doing the work. And I think that's great. Let me ask the opposite question. Two questions. How are the teachers reacting to this? And you can focus on the science teachers if you want. You probably know them best, or the art teachers, the industrial arts teachers, whatever the case may be. Okay. How are they reacting to this? Excuse me.
Okay. First of all, understand that the week before the kids came back, we had a full week of professional development.
Cool.
I personally did a kind of a webinar thing. I had all the art teachers. I had all the tech ed, all the agri-science, all the family and consumer science, all the STEM, and all the science teachers, all right, virtually. And we did training. We went over a lot of the things we just talked about. In other words, facility-wise, what kinds of things do you need to make sure are going on? And if you notice they're not, you need to contact your house administrator to make sure that that's rectified. That's one thing we took a look at. We took a look at various models. In other words, if I'm a tech ed teacher, all right, and I have all these power tools and hand tools, well, how am I going to do instruction? Well, obviously, that's very similar to science.
Right.
In other words, if I have a drill press, I would only have one student use that drill press in a period. All right? Whatever they're working on, that's it. One student uses the table saw. All right, and on it goes. One student uses his or her own set of hand tools. Right now, once it's done, those have to be cleaned. They have to be disinfected, sanitized. Right before the next person, before the next person comes, the next student comes in and uses it. All right, but that's again a very viable model. They're getting a hands-on piece. They're actually handling it. They're exercising the safety precautions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we have that. So we talked about that. And again, we talked about the things we already mentioned about the science. Then we mentioned certainly with the art and the idea of them working at the particular tables, social distancing, and sharing. Okay, are you going to share tools? Okay, you can share as long as they have been cleaned, sanitized, and disinfected before the next person uses them. And it's just, but you know what, Larry? I'll be honest with you. In the science, at least, this already has been a protocol that's been in place because at the end of
it should
your
have been.
Experiment,
I guarantee you, it wasn't as carefully as it is now. I guarantee it's.
Oh, you're careful. Right. You're right. But and there's that extra step of. I mean, we used to clean and sanitize, but we didn't disinfect. So now we have the disinfection piece that we've added to that. But it's something that had been done anyway. So the next time they come in, and this is even. You know, what about personal protective equipment? Some school districts share the personal protective equipment. In other words, for the goggles, it's a case in point. All right. Well, what do you do if you've got, you know, a double period of a lab and then you've got another double period coming up and the kids have the same goggles have to be used by more than one student? Well, obviously, what you want to do is you want to clean them with, you can use soap and water, and then you put them in a goggle sanitizer. And the reason you do that is because the UV light that's in that sanitizer deactivates the virus.
There you go. I didn't know
that. There you go. So, so you can certainly do that. And, you know, gloves, well, the gloves, you put them on your hands, all right, you use them. And then you lather them up with soap and water while they're on your hands. And that, what does that do? It deactivates the virus. So now you just then rinse them off, wipe them, then you're ready for the next group to use it. Or
are the kids using gloves in lab? Are the kids using gloves?
Yes, they have to.
Right, let me ask you a dumb question because this I don't know. Are they using throwaway gloves? Because obviously you can't clean out the inside of a glove very easily, I don't think.
Well, yeah, you can. You can turn it inside out and do it if you want. But again, remember the kids, before they put the gloves on, they have sanitized their hands.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So when they put them in there, they shift. As long as they've done it appropriately and the teachers have to train the students to do that, their hands should be pretty free of a deactivated. Now, that's the other interesting piece. The soap and water, it does deactivate, but it also removes it from the surface. When I'm using a disinfectant, it does not necessarily remove it. It does deactivate it, but it doesn't remove it. But that's okay.
Well, you know, I wanted to talk to you. I work with the Education Market Association, okay? And they're working with, I think it's ISSA, these sanitation people. And they've developed a thing. I believe the certification, you can look it on the Ed Market Association website. Okay, and it's called, I think, GRBAC, all right? I may be able to find it here. I'm looking for it right now. But it's a deep – here it is, GBAC. And you might be interested in this, okay? It's edmarket.org, edmarket.org. And right at the top of their website, GBAC certification programs. I mean, I know that group and Jim McGarry over there really well, but – this is the deep cleaning certification, okay? And they're offering this to schools. Of course, you'd have to pay for it, okay? But there's a discounted deal and all that sort of thing. But it's the do you know anything about that? GBAC certification.
No, I do not, but I'll certainly check it out. Now, the other – and why that you mentioned – I'm glad you mentioned the deep cleaning because we do fogging. What we do is near either early in the morning and or later in the day, We do have custodial maintainer services going around doing the fogging of every classroom, every location in there. And this is a non-toxic type of chemical that's
fog.
Being used.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, it involves the use of vinegar, and that's the raw product.
Wow.
It's not the final. But and these are what they use. They use this fogging device on cruise ships. That's how we learned about it. And they use it to destroy. And again, you usually on cruise ships, and many of them, you have an older population that is more sensitive. So they want to make you want to make sure that you've got a very effective type of disinfectant that's being used to deactivate the virus.
I'll tell you a funny story about that. A friend of mine flew to South Africa from New York, and the plane stopped in Lagos, Nigeria. And a few people got off, and without any warning, a crew of guys with the fogger came on. And while you're sitting there in your plane, in your seat with no warning, the whole flight, God only knows what was sprayed on there. He couldn't believe it.
Oh, my God.
Okay, and
no,
then another eight-hour flight to or whatever it was to Johannesburg. But, fogging. So you get, I'm glad nobody's there. But this is edmarket.org, edmarket.org.
Yep.
Check it out.
When we're done.
They're good folks. We got to go, my friend. You know, I got to tell you something. You're really doing a good job. Your time has come. You've been doing school safety for 500 years. Okay, 500 years you've been doing school safety, and finally everybody's concerned about that. Right.
I am so zoomed out. I've been doing so many. The last 2 months, I've been doing so much work with the, and it's good. It's a good thing with a lot of the international, national, and regional and state organizations because, you know, they especially this is just before school started. You know, they didn't know what to do. They had no idea what to do.
Nobody
so we've
knows.
Been training a lot of people on all these things. And again, it's very interesting. I'll let you go in a minute, but if I did a Zoom training session by Friday, part of it is probably already changed because we already learned so much more.
It's
just a moving target.
And one last question. What did you learn from the overseas folks? Have you learned anything from them, like Hong Kong and Singapore or wherever?
Yes. Well, they went back to classes sooner than we did.
Right.
So it was very interesting to see what came of what and how they were doing it, what they were doing. We did learn from them. We did learn. I will say that. So that was very helpful.
Cool.
And it's to the point now where we are sharing information because we're all engaged in the same thing. I do work with the ASE, which is an Association for Science Education in the UK. And we've been exchanging ideas. And this goes to all of the UK, you know, like Australia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh,
so
cool.
This really kind of goes worldwide. And we do end up with the NSTA, and then we've been working together. We've been working with the ACS, doing programs in a lot of the international organizations. So it's in that respect, it's good. It's brought everybody together. We're all on a common theme.
Oh.
And
there is good coming out of this. I hate to say that, but it's lemonades from lemons,
well,
as the old frog goes. There is good coming out of it.
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree.
Hopefully we'll all learn something. So we'll talk again probably in the spring, and we'll see how safe everybody is, Ken. Okay? And in the meantime,
safe-er.
You be safe.
Where?
You
safe,
be safe.
Safe-er. You can't be safe.
Safe-er.
You can only be safe-er.
Thank you. We want to be safe-er, everybody. Thanks, Ken.
You got it.
Be safe. Be
careful.
Care,
okay. You too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yep. Bye. Dr. Ken Roy, everybody, NSTA safety blogger, chief of safety, the king of for Glastonbury Schools, but the king worldwide of school health safety in both labs and throughout the whole school. All right. And this whole school world and the school district. Great guy. And again, Merlin's assistant back with the Arthur of the Round Table. And look how far he has come. His time is now the king of safety. All right. And it's really serious stuff. And I hope everything works out for everybody. We'll archive education-talkradio.org. You can also see everything we're doing over at ace-ed.org. Go over, read our magazine, enjoy it. It's all about equity and access. That's what we care about. All right. So we want everybody to be safe and all students to be safe. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Everybody be safe. I'll talk to you later.